friends, neighbors, and fellow builders of the common life, we meet at a time when it is easy to confuse noise with strength and speed with progress. The machines around us move quickly. The markets change quickly. The messages arrive without rest. And yet the great work of a people is still done by patience, courage, memory, and care. A nation is not made by its engines alone, nor by the number of wires that cross its cities, nor by the height of its towers. It is made by the character of ordinary people doing ordinary duties with unusual faithfulness. There is a kind of courage that is praised in every age. The courage of the field, the courage of the rescue, the courage that runs toward visible danger. We honor it, and rightly. But there is another courage, quieter and more frequently demanded. It is the courage to tell the truth when exaggeration is profitable, to be fair when anger is fashionable, to study a question when slogans would be easier, to keep a promise when no audience is watching, and to labor for a future whose benefits may be enjoyed by people we will never meet. The life of a free community asks more of us than complaint. Complaint may be the beginning of wisdom when it names a real injury, but it becomes a poor substitute for service when it never lifts a hand. The citizen who only sneers at every failure is not yet doing the full work of citizenship. The citizen who sees a broken school, a neglected park, a lonely elder, a dishonest custom, or a bitter quarrel, and asks, "What can I repair? What can I learn? Whom can I help?" has already begun to strengthen the Republic. We should not pretend that the tasks before us are small. Many families know the weight of prices that rise faster than wages. Many young people wonder whether the promises offered to them were written for another generation. Many workers feel that their skill has been treated as disposable. Many communities have watched industries vanish, rivers become polluted, neighbors become strangers, and public speech become a contest of contempt. To name these things is not pessimism, it is honesty. But honesty must not end in despair. A problem clearly seen is a summons, not a sentence. The remedy begins with a principle so simple that sophisticated people often overlook it. Every human being has a dignity that does not depend on wealth, fashion, party, accent, origin, age, or usefulness to the powerful. From that principle flow many duties. We must build schools that do more than sort children into winners and losers. We must build workplaces where excellence is expected and exploitation is refused. We must build towns where safety does not require suspicion of every stranger, and where prosperity does not mean pushing the poor out of sight. We must build institutions that can admit error without collapsing into shame, and correct error without surrendering to cynicism. No generation receives a finished country. Each receives an inheritance mixed with achievement and failure. We inherit bridges, laws, libraries, songs, farms, courts, workshops, and the accumulated skill of millions. We also inherit debts, exclusions, wounds, and habits of mind that no longer deserve obedience. Gratitude does not require blindness, and criticism does not require contempt. The mature patriot loves a country as one loves a family. Not because it is flawless, but because it is bound to us by duty, memory, sacrifice, and hope. If we want a public life worthy of free people, we must recover the art of listening without surrendering judgment. Listening is not weakness. It is the discipline by which a large society remains human. When we listen well, we do not merely wait for our turn to speak. We search for the fear beneath the anger, the experience beneath the opinion, the fact beneath the rumor, and the possible friend beneath the apparent opponent. The strongest argument is not weakened by understanding the person who disagrees with it. It is strengthened because it has passed through the test of reality. We must also recover respect for craft. There is craft in teaching a child to read, in repairing a roof, in writing clear code, in planting an orchard, in nursing the sick, in keeping books honestly, in designing a bridge, in cooking a meal, in conducting research, in raising a family, and in governing a city. A society that honors only fame and fortune teaches its people to despise the very work that keeps it alive. Let us praise excellence wherever it appears, especially when it appears without applause. The young should hear from us neither flattery nor scolding, but invitation. They should be told that their lives matter too much to be spent only in performance and comparison. They should be given the tools to think, the room to fail, the example of adults who can apologize, and the challenge of work that is larger than self-display. If they inherit only our anxieties, they will grow tired before their strength has flowered. If they inherit our courage, our unfinished questions, and our confidence that repair is possible, they may exceed us in ways we cannot imagine. Technology will help us, but it will not absolve us. A tool can multiply wisdom or multiply folly. It can carry knowledge across oceans, or carry falsehood faster than correction can follow. It can free hands from drudgery, or make every waking hour answerable to a silent machine. The question is not whether we will have powerful tools. We already do. The question is whether we will have powerful purposes, disciplined enough to guide them toward human flourishing rather than mere appetite. Let us therefore choose a standard higher than victory over one another. Let us choose usefulness. Let the engineer ask whether the design serves life. Let the official ask whether the rule is just. Let the merchant ask whether profit has been earned without degrading the buyer or the worker. Let the artist ask whether beauty has been made more available. Let the neighbor ask who has been missing from the table. Let each of us ask, at the close of the day, whether some small corner of the world is more honest, more kind, or more capable because we passed through it. There will be disappointments. Good laws will be delayed. Good plans will meet resistance. Good people will misunderstand one another. Some efforts will fail after honest labor, but the measure of a people is not that they never stumble. It is that they know how to begin again without surrendering their souls to bitterness. The builders of every decent institution worked in the presence of uncertainty. They planted trees without proof that they would sit in the shade. They taught children whose futures they could not control. They defended principles before those principles were popular. They endured being called foolish by those who mistook caution for wisdom. So let us be practical in the deepest sense. Let us repair what is near, learn what is true, protect what is vulnerable, and imagine what is better. Let us argue with seriousness and serve with humility. Let us refuse the cheap comfort of believing that every fault belongs to someone else. Let us remember that a republic is not a spectator event. It is a shared workshop, a common table, a school of character, and a promise renewed by use. The work is large, but we are not helpless. The future is uncertain, but it is not empty. It waits for the shape of our hands, our words, our laws, our mercy, and our courage. If we do these things, not perfectly but faithfully, we may leave to those who follow us something better than an inheritance of complaint. We may leave them proof that free people can govern themselves, correct themselves, and care for one another without losing the fire of liberty. We may leave them towns where trust has been rebuilt, institutions that deserve patience, work that carries dignity, and stories that teach courage. And when they ask what we did in our season of difficulty, may the answer be simple. We did not look away. We did not give up. And we gave our strength to the common good.